In August 1989, Beverly Hills police entered a mansion soaked in blood. Jose and Kitty Menendez, Hollywood wealth, Cuban-American prestige, had been shot multiple times, execution style, with a shotgun. Their sons, 21-year-old Lyle and 18-year-old Eric, were left wailing on the 911 call. At first, they were treated as devastated victims, but less than a year later, they'd become America's most hated murderers. The motive? A $14 million state. The method? Cold, calculated, and brutal. That was the official narrative. But what if it wasn't that simple? What if behind the designer clothes, tennis scholarships, and perfect haircuts were two boys trapped in a home of psychological terror and sexual abuse? Too afraid to speak, too ashamed to run. When they finally confessed to the killings, it was their explanation, not their silence, that enraged the public. Were the Menendez brothers cold-blooded heirs or broken sons pushed to their breaking point? And why, decades later, has TikTok become the unlikely battleground for their redemption? So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Perfect Murder. It was just after 11 p.m. on August 20th, 1989. When a chilling 911 call sent police rushing to one of the wealthiest neighborhoods in America. The voice on the other end, panicked, choking with tears, belonged to Lyle Menendez. "Someone killed my parents," he screamed. The scene they found inside the 90210 mansion was nothing short of a war zone. Kitty Menendez's face had been blown away. Jose's head was nearly decapitated. There were pools of blood, brain matter on the walls, and no signs of forced entry. At first glance, the Menendez family was the American dream in action. Jose Menendez, a Cuban immigrant, had risen to become an entertainment executive, holding titles at RCA, and eventually, the CEO seat at Lev Entertainment. Kitty was a former beauty queen turned socialite. Their sons, Lyle and Eric, were charming, athletic, and spoiled, attending Princeton and elite prep schools, wearing designer suits, driving Porsches. But it took detectives just months to grow suspicious. Lyle and Eric seemed oddly at ease. They bought Rolex watches, luxury cars, and expensive clothes with their parents' money. Within 6 months, they'd spent nearly $1 million. Still, the boys didn't crack. It wasn't until March 1990, when Eric confessed during a therapy session to his psychologist, Dr. Jerome Oziel, that the house of cards began to fall. Oziel, fearing for his own safety, recorded conversations with Eric and later with both brothers, without their knowledge. When prosecutors finally charged them, the media had a field day, rich kids kill for inheritance. The trial became a spectacle, a parade of privilege, horror, and scandal. But then the brothers did something no one expected. They turned the story upside down. Under cross-examination, both Lyle and Eric testified that their father Jose had molested them for years, that their mother, Kitty, knew and allowed it to continue, that their home was not a mansion, but a prison of shame, manipulation, and threats. Lyle described being sexually assaulted by his father since age 7. Eric sobbed as he recounted the same. They said they feared for their lives, that the night of the murder, after their father threatened to kill them for speaking out, they snapped. The prosecution painted them as liars, manipulators, privileged brats, trying to justify the unjustifiable. But something had shifted. The courtroom audience, especially women, began to soften. The nation was torn. Could these two killers also be victims? Even as the first trial ended in a hung jury, the brothers' fate remained suspended between empathy and revulsion. But in their retrial, the judge ruled the abuse testimonies inadmissible. Without context, the Menendez brothers looked like monsters again. They were convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. The case was closed, or so it seemed. Chapter 2. The TikTok Reckoning. Decades passed. The Menendez brothers disappeared behind prison walls. They served their time in separate facilities, with no contact allowed. They studied. They read. They became model inmates. But something unexpected happened in the 2020s. A new generation, too young to remember the media circus of the 1990s, discovered their story. And they didn't see two spoiled murderers. They saw something else. On TikTok, thousands of young people, many survivors of abuse themselves, began to post clips from the original trials. Eric's tearful testimony, Lyle's voice cracking as he spoke about being forced to stay silent. The haunting footage wasn't just nostalgia, it was proof. The hashtag Free the Menendez Brothers exploded. People began asking hard questions. Why were the brothers never given a fair chance to tell their story? Why did the judge block expert witnesses on child abuse? Why did the media paint them as greedy liars before the trial even began? The system had failed them, many believed. Not because they weren't guilty, but because it refused to consider the full truth. Suddenly, the brothers weren't just infamous. They were cultural icons, symbols of repressed trauma and injustice. In a world finally learning how to talk about abuse, their case felt eerily ahead of its time. Then came the bombshell. In 2023, new evidence surfaced. An FBI report revealed a letter written by Eric to his cousin in 1988, a full year before the murders, confessing the abuse. "I can't take it anymore," he wrote. "He's doing it again." This wasn't retroactive justification. This was contemporaneous, documented fear. The public erupted. Calls for retrial were reignited. A petition gained over 500,000 signatures. Celebrities and psychologists weighed in. Even law professors began reconsidering the verdict. And still, the brothers sat in prison. Today, Lyle and Eric are incarcerated at R.J. Donovan Correctional Facility in San Diego. In a twist of fate, they were finally reunited in 2018, almost 30 years after the murders. They spend their days reading, mentoring younger inmates, and reflecting. They maintain they are not proud of what they did. They say they were terrified children trying to survive. Is it possible to believe them and still believe in justice? Or are we just rewriting the past to fit a new social narrative? That's the uncomfortable question that lingers. Because if the Menendez brothers deserve compassion, how many other monsters might too?